This is the Ray Lucia Show.
Coming to the bat for the answers here.
The one show that helps you make better money moves. The program all about your money, your business, and your life.
You guys talk about a lot of really good information that even I can understand.
Call Ray now at 844-RAY-SHOW, 844-RAY-SHOW. This is the Ray Lucia Show.
Thank you, and welcome to the one talk show in America that helps you make better money moves. 844-RAY-SHOW. If you want to call us, do it now. 844-729-7469. We have our automated attendant standing by. Hello, Johnny Dean.
Automated attendant standing by. What was this, a robotic?
No, I was just talking to you about Bill Gates and the fact that...
I've heard of him.
Remember that dude?
Yeah.
He's got a couple of bucks more than me. Not many.
Yeah, as near as I can understand it, he's almost got enough to retire on now.
I was reading MIT Technology Review. Can you imagine me reading that?
What were you doing with technology?
And they asked him for his 10 breakthrough technologies, and who would know more about technology than Bill Gates? And I was just fascinated. We don't have time to get into all of these. Maybe at a later date we can. But he did talk a little bit about some of the stuff that you and I have been discussing. Let me just run through a couple of these, if I may. And
yeah,
you can,
yeah.
First, all robot right. dexterity.
Robot dexterity?
Yeah, it means exactly what it sounds like.
See, when I hear that, I picture the one from Lost in Space. You know, Danger Will Robinson, you know, where he had like no dexterity whatsoever.
Yeah, well, they're solving that problem. And now they're teaching robots to teach themselves how to do certain things. If the piece doesn't fit the first time, how to rotate it and all that stuff. You know, conveyor belt, whatever you do technologically, putting stuff together.
Hey, that's great.
Like surgery and all that. So it was just fascinating. I mean, there's a company called Dactyl, of all things, D-A-C-T-Y-L.
Yes, as in pterodactyl.
Exactly.
Yes. All right.
This one is really interesting. New wave nuclear power.
New wave nuclear. Does this have anything to do with Blondie and Devo and groups like that?
As a matter of fact.
New wave.
And AOC, for that matter.
Okay, fine.
It's a new band out of the Bronx.
Hey, I like it.
He says here there's generation 4 fission reactors, an evolution of traditional design, smaller modular reactors, and fusion reactors. And basically, they're much safer. They're miniaturized reactors and can save money and reduce environmental and financial risks. Isn't that what the problem? All the, you know, people freaking out about nukes. And nuclear energy is really the best going, at least based on what we know today.
Well, it should be. They used to worry about leaks and, you know, massive accidents and things like that, like the Chernobyl kind of thing that we had. But I think they've sort of solved that, or at least contained it. The problem now is storage of the, you know, nuclear waste and all that.
Yeah, and they do address that in the article. I won't get into it, but it just seemed to me like, yeah, sounds pretty darn good to me.
I think that's the future. You got
to
have clean energy.
And they talked about predicting preemies, you know, kids that are like born too early.
Sure, okay. Yeah.
Premature births. Yes. I won't get into that, but it was very interesting in the reading. The gut probe in a pill. I've seen that advertised.
The what now?
You swallow this pill, and it's got all kinds of TV cameras and stuff in there, and they can go through and take a look at your gut and see what's going on inside you.
They got cameras everywhere. Now even inside your stomach isn't sacred?
That is true.
That's what's next.
How about this one? Custom cancer vaccines. We've talked about longevity on the program, and it's a key component in retirement planning. Well, now they're getting very, very close to a cancer vaccine. A lot of this stuff, by the way, coming out 2019, available in a couple of years. Here's what he said about that. Conventional chemotherapies take a heavy toll on healthy cells and aren't always effective against tumors. But this is now available in human testing. So what we're talking about here is this is right around the corner.
Yeah. You know, some of these things we talked a week or two ago about, very similar technologies that they were looking at for 2019.
Well, it all started back, we were talking about the human genome DNA mapping.
Yes.
Which I think concluded back, I don't know, 7, 8, 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And the cost, we were discussing the cost, where it was $100 million to do DNA mapping.
Yeah.
The genetic code, the Human Genome Project, as it was called. And now it costs like $100. I mean, 23andMe and all these things.
Now, you know? 99.999% off through
Groupon. This one, I think we should send to AOC. They're working hard on a cow-free burger.
Well, I thought they have those. Don't they have the
They do, but they're working even harder to make them taste better and all that stuff.
I had one over the weekend. It was actually great.
Really?
Yes.
Did it taste like a meat burger?
Yes.
Well, they're working on this because it's going to solve the cow fart problem, possibly?
No, okay. You can't say it.
In either event, that's going on. We did discuss this the other day, the carbon dioxide catcher. Once again, everybody's worried about the environment and so forth. And this removes CO2 from the atmosphere.
Yeah,
now, they're still worrying about what to do with it once they remove it.
Well, there's all kinds of uses for it. But the problem is you can't build it, at least not yet, on a large enough scale.
Well, here's what they said in a surprise finding last summer.
Yeah.
Harvard climate scientist David Keith calculated that machines could, in theory, pull this off for less than $100 a ton through an approach known as direct air capture. I won't get into the details, but we did discuss how very expensive it is. Well, now they're finding different ways technologically to make it way, way less expensive.
Well, see, now you're talking because you reduce the amount that you're putting into the air and you start cleaning it up. And you got like a double benefit there.
That's absolutely right. And there have been others that have been looking at this. There's a Zurich-based company called ClimateWorks. There are others that are trying to figure out the greenhouse gas story, pulling it out of the sky.
Yeah.
I think that's another pretty good band we could put together.
What?
The gas and company.
Classical greenhouse gas?
Greenhouse gas. Yeah, an instrumental.
I've already got an instrumental in my mind, as a matter of fact. Let me work on that. I'll play it for you.
This one, amazing for worldwide works. Sanitation without sewers. I have a hard time understanding this with my small pea brain, but evidently there are these specialized toilets that will become available. It says here, within the next 1 to 2 years. About 2.3 billion people don't have good sanitation. And we see that. I know my wife has spent time in Africa. She works for a
charity. Yeah,
that's
a big problem there.
And there's a huge, huge problem. By the way, Bill Gates has invested in a lot of these companies. So some of this may be so self-serving, but I don't see him as the kind of guy that's trying to front run some companies.
At this point in his life, I don't think so. I don't think he's looking to kill the market anymore.
Smooth talking AI assistance was another one. You know, we've got Alexa and Siri and all that stuff, but they're really developing that so that you could have an assistant that will do virtually everything, make phone calls for you and understand conversations or return emails and understand the email back.
Yeah,
I don't know. I don't really understand this
stuff. We're kind of getting there.
We're getting closer.
We're about 10 years off from anything really good. But yeah.
So what is the point?
Yeah,
the point is we discuss this sort of thing on this program, and one of the things we focus on with respect to retirement is how long we might live and how healthy we might live living longer. And what it suggests is, well, think about this for a minute. If you have a vaccine that can cure, they're looking on the 10 of the top cancers in the United States and around the world. If you can have a vaccine, a polio type vaccine that would eradicate certain cancers, that's huge news. That's really big stuff, especially as we discussed longevity planning and why it's so critically important. We've discussed 4% rules and 3% rules and 2.9% rules. And a lot of that stuff kind of gets thrown out the window when you discuss longevity and people living well into centenarianhood. And so it becomes more and more important for us in this business to stay close to this research and for you all those that are listening on your radio, to be talking to your advisor about ways that you can mitigate longevity, risk, et cetera, et cetera. Also, I think the healthcare thing is a really important one too. For example, having little tag-ons to life insurance policies, as we've discussed, as opposed to having to pay $4,000, $5,000, $10,000 in premiums for traditional long-term care insurance policies. You could potentially save a lot of money there if you're banking on the future, which I am.
I am too, and I'm glad these kinds of things are happening while I'm still young enough to be able to qualify
for enjoy them. I'm very excited for my grandkids, to be honest with you, except that they're going to need money from their gramps.
I need a little too. Where am I in line?
Stick around, folks. You'll see if I give them any when we come back. Don't go away.
Download the Biz Talk Radio app, available on iOS, Android, and BlackBerry. Biz Talk Radio.
Welcome back, folks. This is the very hip Ray Lucia Show, along with the not so hip Johnny.
I'm not hip. I am so far from hip. It's,
me too.
I was hip for about a week and a half back in about 1970, not about the time that this song came out, and that was it.
I've never been hip.
No, not once.
No, that young guy just came to us and was talking about, you know, legalized marijuana and how to protect it.
Oh, well, that's, yeah, no, forget it.
What do I know about that?
You know.
I said, what does he want us to do? Go out and toke it up with him?
Not going to happen. We always have somebody stopping by. They have tour groups come by.
Everybody's got a deal.
And there's a tour group coming in off the air just for folks listening. And he says, hey, Ray, I got this, you know.
Everybody's got something. I went to dinner the other night with a guy that was pitching me something I can't talk about. And, if it works, we're all billionaires. And if it doesn't work,
then we got egg on our head. It's just, you know, whatever.
And then I saw something the other day in the 5G space, and we were just talking about all these inventions and technologies that are coming to the forefront.
You're talking about the cell phone?
And you need, yeah. And you need, you need to have billions of dollars. To invest in that, you just got to be freaking lucky to be an early investor. And these guys are pitching me like, you know, give us $100,000. We need to raise $1.5 million and all that stuff, and it's like,
well, that's just it. I mean, you got to be able to invest $100,000, $200,000.
You got to be able to lose
in 100 companies, in 100 different companies, and hope that one, if you're lucky, two will do something to make up for all that other money you lost.
We were just talking about who does that. Bill Gates.
Yeah.
Bill Gates is putting his money into a lot of these companies, but he's Bill Gates.
He does have a few bucks in his savings account.
Billions and billions of dollars. He's bigly famous, and
I don't even know where he is on the list anymore of richest
people.
Is he okay? There was the guy
two or three. Bezos.
Bezos, I think, is at the top,
and I think Warren Buffett maybe number two. Maybe
I don't think so. I forget, but anyway, it doesn't matter.
I don't know. You shouldn't be in your 40s or 50s and be one of the richest guys in the world.
You don't think so?
You should be in your 60s, 70s, or 80s like Buffett.
What, you have to earn it? Is that the deal?
I mean, Buffett really earned it. A lot of this technology stuff. I mean, they earned
it over time. But yeah, I don't know the technology. But look at guys like Bezos. I mean, they saw this, and he actually invented the company.
Oh,
he wasn't just putting money into somebody else's idea.
Mark Cuban, whom, can I throw names around? I've met Mark.
You haven't met Bezos yet, though.
I haven't, no.
And I know you've met Mark, but yeah, it's people
like that. But I met him sort of flukishly. That's a whole other story that I have to get into. But we have emailed a couple of times.
You and?
And a Cuban.
MC?
Yeah, MC we call him. Yeah, MC.
The Hammer, you call him.
But I think he shut down his email that I knew about, because the last time I tried email and it bounced back to me. So I think he got tired of emailing
me. He got rid of that Netscape email address that he had all those.
Okay, on to the other day. Remember I brought up some of the questions you must answer before and during retirement? You know, stuff that we've beat to death on this and other programs.
Yeah.
Mentioned you take Social Security and all of that.
Right.
One of the things that caught my attention, though, was how flexible is my spending? And I was reminded of this when I read one of Dr. Fowle's articles over the weekend, which he's got a lot of them. The whole business of spending in retirement. And of course, what they're talking about here is dynamic spending. Those individuals that have the ability to change their spending in retirement can certainly mitigate a lot of the risks that come along with the so-called 4% rule.
You mean, in other words, I could afford to take a cut in pay if I had to because either I've got other guaranteed sources of income somewhere else, I've got a savings to draw on, or for whatever reason, I can adjust my spending as needed.
Yeah, so when you think about a 4% rule, and we discussed this ad nauseum over the last several weeks.
Guideline is really what it is.
The whole idea is you would take a systematic withdrawal from your portfolio, automatically rebalance it, and so forth. Well, when they talk about a dynamic spending plan or other spending plans, and, you know, there are others as well, like just take a required minimum distribution. If you follow the RMD system, you'll never run out of money.
You can't run out of money, but you'll also take a cut in pay.
But you'll also have to take cut in pay because you're spending a percentage, not of the starting amount, but of what you have
left
over at the end of the year. And some of that seems obvious on the surface, but maybe not so much to people that don't study this for a living. A dynamic spending plan does exactly what you say. Mm-hmm. In a year where maybe the market doesn't do so well, you reduce how much you spend. Mm-hmm. And in a year where the market does spectacularly well, you can increase how much money you spend.
I hate that.
Well, I hate it too, because last time I checked, I'm, you know, in my semi-retired mode. I don't want to take a cut in pay.
Well, you don't want to take a cut. What you don't want as a retired person is to say, tell your grandkids, I'm sorry, I can't make your, you know, your graduation because the markets were down and I can't afford a ticket this summer or whatever.
So Ben, I think it was Ben Carlson that wrote about this along with Wade Fowle. And he said, number one, how flexible is my spending? And I would contend that most retirees' spending is not that flexible.
Not at all, would be almost true.
And then he goes on to say, how will I turn my resources into reliable lifetime cash flows? That is an even better question. Mm-hmm. Because at the point where you move from accumulation to decumulation, there needs to be a strategy on how you turn your cash into cash flow.
Yes, cash flow. And this is where if you have to ask somebody how flexible is your spending because you want to know because you got a strategy for them, you probably don't have a very good strategy. That'd be my guess.
Well, I guess good is a relative term. Whether it's a good strategy or a bad strategy, it's kind of relative, and it happens to fluctuate with when you retire. I've got something else here. I don't know if we'll get to it, but maybe in our next segment, I can talk to you about something. It wasn't Ben Carlson. It was a different Carlson that wrote this. But Ben, this was brilliant. The worst entry point in stock market history. Remind me to go over that with you next segment.
Are you talking about like now?
The year 2000, as it turns out.
Oh, you mean they're going back?
Well, they're looking back in time and saying that we now exist. If you retired in the year 2000, you may have retired on the worst day you could probably retire.
You probably did.
I'll talk about that. But what Fowle said is this, quote, wealth managers should advocate dynamic spending in proportion to survival probabilities. Now, I rarely disagree with Dr. Fowle. But I just don't see this adjusted up for exogenous pension income and down for longevity risk aversion.
Okay, you're using a lot of $9 college words there, but let's because we're about to go to a break.
Well,
this means it
just basically says that if you're worried about longevity, you should spend less.
Yes.
And if you're not worried about longevity and you have a dynamic spending plan, you could spend more from time to time.
I don't agree
with this because survival possibilities and probabilities
are going up.
They're going up, but they also decline as you age.
They absolutely. Let's talk about that.
All right, we'll come back, and I'll talk about this entry period coming up in just a bit. You're not going to want to miss this, folks. It may sound complicated, but we'll make it worse. No, no, stick around.
What's
we'll be
right
in
back. Store for your business?
Send us your feedback by emailing info@biztalkradio.com, or you can send us comments via the BizTalk Radio app.
Welcome back, folks. This is the Ray Lucia Show, helping you to make better money moves. Ben Carlson wrote the worst entry point in stock market history. This is fascinating stuff, Johnny. I think you'll find it quite interesting. Here's what he had to say. The 35-year period from 1930 to 1964 produced a total return of 2,234%. 2,234%, or 9.4% on an annualized basis.
From 1930, of course, the starting point was pretty darn low.
Yep. The 35-year period from 1965 to 1999 produced a 5,947%, or 12.4% return on an annualized basis.
That, of course, includes your 1995 to 1999 run-up on the...
Big run-up.
Yeah.
Now, check this out, folks. This is interesting. The 19-year period from the year 2000 to 2018 produced a total return of 147%, or 4.9% on an annualized basis for the Standard & Poor's 500.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Wow.
Interesting. We were just, you and I, talking about having other non-correlating assets that can turn into income when and if you need it. If an individual retired in the year 2000 and was expecting 8% from his or her stock portfolio, or God forbid, 12.4%, and ended up with 4.9%, they got big trouble, and they don't even have to be in River City.
With a capital T. No. and you know, if they're retired and they were drawing money out of that portfolio, I mean, they aren't even getting that.
No,
there's a good chance that they were toast.
They're in big trouble. Now, to put this in perspective, he goes on, for the 35-year period from 2000 to 2034, to earn the same return as the 1930 to 1964 time frame, the S&P would need to earn roughly 15% per year from now until 2034.
Mm.
Wow.
That's a tall order.
It gets worse.
Okay.
For the 2000 to 2034 period to earn the same 12.4% annual return as it did from 65 to 95,
yeah,
it would have to see annual gains of over 22% per year for the next 16 years.
That's what it would have to average. So you'd need one that's up 80% or 60%, one that's like down 10%, one that's up, oh man, I don't see that happening.
It's very interesting for a couple of different reasons. Number one, in our humble opinion, I think I can speak for you, it is unlikely to happen. But I think from our perspective, I don't want to speak for you here because I don't know, I haven't visited with you about this, but I have talked about how market performance over a 30-year time period produces around an 8% return. So it is likely that the performance over the next 15 years will be better than 4.9%. How much better, I think, is unknown, but it is likely. Now, markets don't always repeat themselves. Maybe returns stay at 4.9%. Certainly there are pundits out there that believe that to be the case. I don't happen to be one of them. I believe that the markets will, in fact, produce returns that might be similar to a 7%, say, return
over the
rather than a 9% or a 12% return.
We're talking about over the next 15 years, yes, or whatever that time period is.
Yes.
I think that's more realistic.
And the reason I am confident, or at least somewhat confident in that, is because it's never happened on a rolling basis. It's never not produced returns.
It's never not happened.
It's never not happened. I'm sorry. Okay. Over a 30-year time period on 30-year rolling spaces. So when you think about that, we should feel somewhat optimistic, even though the market is experiencing serious volatility, certainly in December. What was December down 15% for the month?
Yeah, S&P, it was different for different indices, but yes, Dow, they were all down.
But what's even more fascinating to me is since the day after the big decline, what was that on Christmas Eve, right? From that period forward, the market's come back as much as, what, 20%?
Pretty I don't know that it's...
sized gains.
Yeah, I don't think it's gotten back everything that it lost, but it's come back, sure.
So I bring this up for a couple of reasons. One is the first thing you have to understand is nobody knows what the 35-year returns are going to be starting from the year 2000. Nobody knows what the returns are going to be from this point forward. What I am suggesting is based on historical data, but historical data, I mean, we'll have to go through the next 19 years to be able to chart what the history books say about the next 19 years, won't we?
Historical data doesn't mean squat. We say that all the time.
So for those that are planning for retirement, let's talk about all y'all, as my friends in the South say all the time. Let's talk about all y'all who are planning for retirement. Then we'll get to all y'all that are already in retirement. All right? So for those that are planning for retirement, I think you could reasonably expect a rate of return in the stock market. I was helping somebody yesterday. I used 7% over the next 30 years. So I took the 8% likelihood down by a percentage point just because I like to be conservative, keeping in mind that that's a 30-year forecast. Now, will the next 15 years be substantially better than the last 15 years? I would hope so. Whether or not it could get you to an 8% return between now and, say, you know, 2035 or whatever, I don't know. And neither do you. So for those planning for retirement, this whole concept of developing other sources of retirement income become absolutely critical. What are other sources of retirement income? Well, one of the things we've discussed is Social Security is a big source.
Oh, yeah.
And anybody that's on the precipice of retirement right now that is not attempting to spend existing assets to postpone taking their Social Security, the difference between an age 62 and an age 70 is about 75% more inflation-adjusted income. I would say you're nuts if you're not doing that. If you have the financial capacity to spend personal money to delay taking Social Security to the very end, that's age 70, you should do that. Number two, for those on the precipice of retirement that are not allocating a certain percentage of their retirement wealth to other sources of stable retirement income that are not correlated to the stock market, you're nuts. Because if the stock market is going to produce returns like it has for the past 18 years going forward, as many predict, not me, but many do, then you want to have other sources of income that are more stable and more dependable than being able to liquidate stocks in order to support your income.
You shouldn't be liquidating stocks in order to support your income anyway, I think you would argue, Ray.
I have argued, and I've written 3 books on that subject, but let's not talk about me. Okay?
I all right.
You
okay,
were just
so,
trained by me on I, this show over the years,
yes.
And that's why you have such a jaundiced and biased view of retirement.
Of bad retirement strategy. No, I shouldn't say bad. Of retirement strategies that really force you to gamble.
I'm not more faulty, I would suggest. I don't think they're bad.
They're not bad because here's the thing. It could work out very well.
Yes.
A systematic withdrawal has shown to work out even better than, you know, a time segmented, like if you want to call it buckets, during markets that, like the last 10 years. that we've had. I mean, you actually wind up with more money.
Of course.
But again, you rolled the dice.
Yeah.
And looking back, it was probably a good bet, but I don't like to bet.
I go back to the research from Wiegand and Irons. I always call him Jeremy Irons.
That's the only thing I think
of. It's not Jeremy.
The guy from
it's
the Die
Robert,
Hard 3, I think
it's
it was.
Robert Irons from Dominican University. And Robert Wiegand from some place in Kansas.
Chico State.
No, he was. But they went, and we discussed this last week, they went through an exhaustive 136-year study.
Yes.
And they did determine that spending from the safe, quote, bucket first, while it made the portfolio riskier as time went on, it produced better results 90% of the time. So the whole concept here is to develop alternative sources of retirement income. That is key, and that's what you need to do, and you need to talk to your advisor about it today.
Hi, this is Fred Dreyer.
Edge of the bullish market. Keep listening to Biz Talk Radio.
Online at biztalkradio.com.
Hey, welcome back, folks. It is Ray Lucia along with Johnny Dean and Julio down at the schoolyard. Welcome back. It's going to be a great day, Johnny boy.
It's been a great show so far. I wish we need more than an hour for some of this stuff. You mentioned before the break, before we get some emails, by the way, if you want to email the show, go to raylucia.com, and you'll see the Ask Ray button link, whatever it is there. And we'll get to some in just a moment. But you mentioned just before the break, you said it's important to have alternative sources of income in case we have, you know, the next 15, 20, 30, you know, 15 years, let's say, that don't meet your needs. Let's say that.
Well,
in case you're doing some
exactly
kind of systematic withdrawal. You mentioned Social Security as one of them. I think that's the most obvious one. What other sources are you talking about? The guaranteed sources?
Let's go back to Social Security real quick. Obviously, a lot of people, we may have a Social Security question. I don't know today, but everybody in the financial services industry is talking about Social Security today.
Yes.
And as well they should. People are living longer. And the Social Security upshot that you get by delaying is pretty good. It's like 7-8%. So when you think about it, at age 62, and you get 75% more money on an inflation-adjusted basis just 8 years later, that's a pretty darn good investment. And then it continues to get better because it's one of the few investments that you can put your money into that almost gives you a guarantee that your income is going to go up at some rate of inflation. They're messing around with chain inflation, all that stuff, and people are ticked off. But by and large, that's a heck of a source of alternative income and should be cherished. Now, you talk about others. You have experienced this yourself, my man, because you and I did a little real estate investing. What was that, like 10, 15 years ago?
It was almost 15 years ago now.
So 15 years ago, and how was your experience with that?
It was wonderful. I still go sometimes to the gas station in Las Vegas and visit. I mean, we've sold it since then, but I said, I used to own a part of this place.
Johnny invested with me in a little venture that I was involved. Now, I told you it was high risk. Remember that?
Yes, you did.
And it wasn't one of the securities thing. It was a friends and family thing.
Well, that's all it was. Yeah, it was real estate, though. And I got a wonderful check. It was every quarter, I think it was, or whatever it was. I put a decent amount of money in, but I got a nice income out of it. We happened to sell at just the right time, but it helped actually pay for two kids in private high school at the same time. And my older daughter at the time needed a car because she was driving, bought her that for cash. Now, I'm not saying that this is like anything. I think we did well. But that was an alternative source
of income.
It could have worked out. It could have not worked out, but it did.
Well, you could have you could have taken the gains. I forget how much you made on it. I don't even care. But you could have taken the gains and reinvested back in more real estate. And today, you know, rather than the car and the college, of course, that's really important, too.
Yeah.
But the car and the college might be worth a couple, three, $4,000 a month right now.
It could very well be. And at the time, I just said, heck, this is great. I need it now. I need the cash. So we sold it, and I did all that I had to do.
You should have called J.G. Wentworth. I need it now.
Yes, I wasn't a good opera singer, though, was the problem.
But I think that's key. So you have a real estate income, and that's risky stuff, folks, and you need to have good counsel.
And you need to have time. Now,
and one thing that I've had in real estate is really, really good counsel.
You did. This was in Las Vegas, this piece that you and I had bought in Las Vegas. At just the time as Las Vegas real estate was peaking, we had somebody that told us we're selling now, and it was the top of the market.
It was our good counsel.
It was.
Now, when I went and bought the stuff myself in Las Vegas, when I counseled with myself, my wife and I were sitting there buying emotionally. We're saying, hey, this could be a cool place. We could retire here someday. No state income tax. And look at the prices going up.
We saw what happened.
Destroyed.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened.
But we were buying for ourselves then. We never rented it out ever. Any of the...
No, it was always empty. It was always empty.
And you stayed there.
I did a couple of times.
Nice place.
Beautiful.
But the prices just got slaughtered.
At one point,
I was saying, boy, I was a genius. Because the prices went up, they doubled, and then they got cut by like 75%.
It started, I think, in 2003 or something, where you started, and next thing you know, you said, my gosh, look at this. It's almost doubled over the last 18 months.
Yep.
And, you know, we saw what happened.
That was the bubble.
But that was
a vacation spot. It wasn't an investment. And I think you have to be very, very careful. There are some people that have emailed me and say, should I buy a place in a resort and, rent it out and all that stuff? And I've never been that fancy on those kinds of things as an investment. Now, if you're going to vacation, it's kind of like owning your own timeshare.
Yeah, it is.
And I let a lot of people use it. I got a lot of enjoyment out of it. All that stuff.
I never paid you a dime for usage of it.
Why does that not surprise me?
You didn't ask me.
That's why. And I
wouldn't. Because you're just a nice guy. But as you said, we had good counsel on this, which reminds me of Father Griswold, the late Father Griswold from St. Augustine High School, who would always say, Mary, Mother of Good Counsel. And the answer was always, pray for us. And so we kind of.
Did you go to St. Augustine?
Yes, I did.
Oh, I didn't know that.
All these years you didn't know that?
You
must have forgotten.
You went to Saints.
I did, yeah. Yeah.
That's funny. My dad was a football coach at Saints.
I met your dad. In the 70s, before I even knew any of the Lucias, there was Coach Lucia.
Yeah.
I thought I've told you this. He's in my yearbook.
Oh, that's right. You have told me this.
Jet black hair he had at the time.
Yeah, exactly.
And he was a big guy, but he was the first Lucia I ever met. Coach Lucia, I met him in 1978.
You should go by and see him at his,
I haven't seen him.
Memory care place.
I know. I don't know. Remember me?
And he'll say, oh, yeah, sure.
Sure, and he can walk away and say, I have no idea who that guy is.
He barely remembers me.
Who is that guy? But he's a fun guy.
He's a great guy.
Coach
Lucia. Do we
have
time to get to an email, or we blew the whole segment?
No, we don't, but I have a couple. Can I give you some by the numbers
here? Yeah, sure,
go
ahead.
I like to do these, and I get these every week at the start of the week. Here are a couple of things. 6 days before the start of the current 10-year bull market for the S&P, it began on March 10th, 2009. 6 days before, 70% of stock investors surveyed were bearish. Now, last week, just 20% of stock investors surveyed were bearish. That's according to the American Association of Individual Investors. What do people know? Is that a sign? I don't know. I'm not going to say it's a signal of anything. Okay, that's one. Number two, we've talked about this before. The worst performing stock in the S&P 500 in 2018 lost 67.1%, all right, in 2018. Bottom of the barrel, number 500. That same stock is ranked number one among all stocks in the S&P this year through the end of February, up 67.7%. You talked about past performance and all that stuff. You think you're going to do that? You're going to jump into the stock that had the best performance or the worst performance. We're going to sell it. You can't.
This is why those stocks that get jettisoned from the Standard & Poor's 500 each year, and they've studied this.
Uh-huh.
These are the ones that have come in because they're doing so well. These are the ones we're throwing out. And the ones we're throwing out have historically done significantly better. Not just marginally better, but significantly better.
It's a risk.
Buy low, sell high. Out of time. Hey, if you want to email me, go to raylucia.com. Click on the Ask Ray button, and I'll get right back to you now. Make it a blessed day. Bye-bye.
You're listening to The Ray Lucia Show, bringing you the best in money information, answering questions about your biggest financial challenges, talking about your money, your business, and your life. Ray Lucia is not a registered representative of or affiliated with any securities brokerage or investment advisory firm. The views and opinions expressed by Ray and his guests are not necessarily those of this station or its sponsors and should not be construed as legal, tax, or investment advice. You should always consult with the appropriate advisors before making any financial decisions. Ray is available to...
This is Biz Talk Radio, America's home.